Wait, wait, stop. That's the one.
Welcome to Zenten Speaks, a show where I make new friends and reconnect with old ones. A show where everyone's stories may inspire you to tell your own story. In this podcast, we encourage everyone to get rid of shame, guilt, fear, doubt, and judgments for themselves and for others, and replace those with love, empathy, compassion, understanding, kindness, and to do your best in everything that you do. In essence, to get rid of things that no longer serve your well-being, to be true to yourself and be honest with others. Today we have a guest. Our guest today is Adam Vibe Gunton, and Adam is an inspirational author of From Chains to Saved. And his book can be found on Amazon, as well as he has a Facebook page called Recovered on Purpose, as well as on the website Recovered on Purpose, which has a lot of inspirational content and more about Adam. And he also has a YouTube channel, and I will post all of that on the show notes today. So I'm very excited to speak to Adam because I saw his content and I'm like, wow, like everyone needs to hear about this and even get inspired by it as I did. So welcome to the show, Adam. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. Thank you.
Yeah, totally. So tell us about who you are and what brings you joy.
Well, who I am a child of God. It took me a long time to really take on that identity because I learned a lot as a kid from my relationship with God. But quickly after I was introduced to him and I accepted him, I was introduced to drugs. And through my childhood, through my sports career in high school that went really well, I just had this hidden drug habit, you know, and I didn't know at the time that this quote unquote fun was going to be leading me down to a path of being homeless, 86 from a homeless shelter, 148 pounds. I'm 215 right now. So I was like, I was near death and unable to stop using these drugs that were taking everything from me. And that's when God showed up in my life in a way that just, I wish everybody was able to seek him as hard as I did for those last 6 to 8 months of my addiction, because that was all I was doing, was seeking God. He didn't show up the first time and in some miraculous way and save me right then. But I just continued to seek and continued to do everything in my power. And then once I actually fully and completely gave up, like I just gave up control of everything in my life, he showed up. And since then, you know, I've been able to, and that was November 6, 2017 is when I got sober. I'm sure we'll get into some of that story later. But since then, you know, what brings me joy, the most joy that I've felt in my life and in my recovery, is when somebody receives or gets introduced to God while talking to me or while I'm speaking. I've had the opportunity to publish a best-selling book, had the opportunity to employ over 20 people and build a multi-million dollar company. I've had the opportunity to speak to thousands of people. And the thing that has brought me the most joy is when I was speaking in a treatment center, and I shared my testimony and I was talking, and then I did my first ever altar call, which is where you just say, hey, does anybody in here want to accept Christ? And and every single person but one person raised their hand. And I remember like, oh my gosh, like these people are in a spot right now that I've been. And now they're going to literally be able to begin a relationship with something that completely changed my life, you know. Mm-hmm. And there's all these things like that are great in the world. There's these, you know, I have a really fun motorcycle and these kinds of things. Like I really love riding that motorcycle, you know, it brings me joy, but it's unmatchable. The feeling I get when somebody gets introduced to their creator.
Nice. That's so wonderful. It's funny you mentioned you're the child of God. I've often say that even when I was a kid, but surprisingly growing up religious, that was a blasphemy. And I was like, well, I'm reading in the Bible and what else am I? And they're like, well, you're good for nothing sinner and all this stuff. I'm like, yeah, I'm a sinner, but I'm not good for nothing. It's like, I'm the son of God. And I'm the child of God. And so it's good, as you mentioned, with the identity. Once you tap into that identity, of course, your life has changed for the better. And you're not part of the worldly stuff that you're having, like drugs and whatever else that was happening. And also, you also mentioned with the stuff that was happening in your life was a search for God or Christ, and which makes sense because whenever, like, I don't take things personally when people do things, because I say when people do things that are unkosher, it's a cry for help, basically. So all the actions that you are doing against yourself, hence probably against other people, because once you're doing bad things to yourself, you do bad things to other people, was a cry for help and a search for God, a search for Christ. And it's great that you mentioned that, because I was thinking, I was like, oh, wow, amazing. And of course, I've noticed spoken to a lot of people who went through addiction and then they rise like a phoenix out of the ashes. They tend to do great things. And especially one of the great things that they do, as you mentioned, is servicing others, are keeping to your path of goodness that you are in now. And that's wonderful to hear and even see in your testimony.
Totally. And I want to ask, what church is telling you that being a child of God is blasphemy?
A lot of them. I would say I've went to one church, at least Jehovah's Witnesses, that I grew up in. And I've heard, I haven't been a member of other churches, but from what I heard, I could be wrong, but other Christianity, like, what's that thing called? Catholics. And because they say because especially Catholics, they're like, your sin, you're nothing, your sin. It's all about like, you're not good enough kind of a thing. Right. It's about whipping yourself in the back and walk around in shame and all these things. So I've heard, but I never practiced it. And so it could be different, but I know in Jehovah's Witnesses. Yeah.
Yeah. I heard while you were talking, that's what I wanted to bring up, because, I'm anybody listening right now, if the church has wounded you, that is a human wound. That is not a wound from God. God would never do that. God would never tell you anything like that. And it's very clear what Jesus came to do. It's very clear he came to save you from the sins. He came to be the last sacrifice, which means that your sins are paid for. They're paid for. And it's very clear. It's very clear in the Bible that if you believe and you receive, you have been adopted and brought into the family of God, and you are a child of God. It's very specific that you are.
Yes, definitely. And so therefore, you don't need to wallow in shame and that you're not good enough and all this stuff. So what was your childhood like?
Yeah, I had a great childhood. I'm sure everybody's heard of the high school I went to, Columbine High School. When I was growing up, I was in that community. I won state as a wrestler in Little League. We won state basically every year on my Little League football team. We won nationals once also on my Little League football team. We won state on my baseball team. We went to the Little League World Series. I was the home run derby hitter at the Little League World Series. Just had this great experience, you know. I don't remember any real trauma except for the shooting. I was in fourth grade at Columbine Hills Elementary, and before that moment, I had never really experienced fear even, you know. I don't remember experiencing anything except for safety, comfort, in my home, in my environment, with my teams and everything. And then we're out at recess one day, and then all of a sudden, like, the teachers are just rounding us up and they're crying and this energy is going on that I'd never experienced. And they're lining us up and they're hurting us into our classrooms. And then the door is locked and we all have to sit over here in this specific corner of the room. And then my teacher is behind her desk on this radio and like listening. And she's like, just telling us to, you know, be quiet, just stay over there, just stay over there. And I'm like going up to her and I'm like asking her like, is what's wrong? Can I do something? And like, they can't tell us. They couldn't even tell us what was going on, because this is the first time there's ever been a mass shooting like this, you know? So nobody knows what's going on. And then my mom came and picked us up. And I just remember, like, because she put me in shotgun. I have an older sister. My sister should have sit shotgun, but my mom put me in shotgun. And we're listening to the radio of this, of what's going on. And it was just really, really, really intense. And then my uncle was the only police officer that got a Medal of Honor that day. For going in and doing his thing. And it was just a really, really horrible situation. And then I like had to get counseling and stuff as a really little kid because I just didn't understand. But then even after that, I mean, I still went to Columbine High School and we came together as a community. A lot of people don't realize that that we came together in a new way, like that hadn't been done before. There was we even created a new chant. Because there was all this media and all this stuff coming down on the community all over the place. And instead of wallowing in shame, like you were talking about earlier, we started this chant. We are Columbine. We are Columbine. And it would like hype us up all the time. And a lot of people don't know, we actually won state in football the year of the shooting, after the shooting happened. And then, and then we won state the next year also. And then we won state my senior year. I was the captain of defense my senior year when we won state. I got to go to state as a wrestler, and just had this great experience, you know? And then, you know, I just had some things happen after high school that just took me down a dark path. I was introduced to drugs early on. And here's the thing, like when I was young, like from kindergarten on, I was golden boy. I was really smart. In fifth grade, I had to go to, from Columbine Hills to this other like preparatory school so I could go to advanced classes and stuff. And then, in eighth grade, I had to go to high school a couple days or a couple classes in the morning. But then at that time, right around like sixth, seventh grade, I was introduced to cocaine by a older influence. And that just kind of started me down a hidden path that, cause I looked up to this person and, you know, looking back, I shouldn't necessarily be, but I didn't know better. And, I went down this path and began a hidden drug habit. So while I'm doing all these things in high school, while I'm playing sports and all this stuff, I'm using drugs more and more and more and more. I didn't realize that it was heading me down addiction. I didn't realize that I'm not supposed to get high and go to school. I didn't realize I'm not supposed to, you know, take ecstasy at lunch, you know, that's, you know, I just didn't necessarily know. Mm-hmm. And then I just had a really, you know, the childhood was great. Childhood was great.
Yeah. How is someone watching this and, of course, getting the work that you do? Because I've seen some of it and I'm like, wow, like this is great stuff. Oh, before I mention that, and you probably already know that and would agree, because I've spoken to a lot of people who've gone through hardships. And once they are in the position where you are now, they would not trade it for anything else, because, of course, that leads to where they are now. Would that be your life? Would you agree? Kind of like your past made you who you are now, because obviously you're in the right space, and it's because of your past you are where you are now and have this mentality that you have currently.
I think that anybody that says that's been through what I've been through is full of it. I would absolutely change that day that I tried drugs. 100%.
Okay.
I think 100%. I would. The trauma that I went through, the amount of trauma I still have to go through because of this, I would take it back in a second. And that's why my mission is to stop as many kids from trying drugs as possible. Mm. I think that people that say that only say that because they know it's not possible. And they're trying to look at it as a good thing. I mean, Anybody wants to ease their pain and suffering. I went through some horrible, horrible, horrible things because of my drug use. And my whole mission is to stop kids from going through what I went through. So I know that I can't take it back. I know that there's nothing I can do now. But if I could, yeah, I would go back and never try drugs ever.
Why?
I wouldn't smoke weed, wouldn't drink, nothing.
You're the first person I've spoken to who say that. And I do like that too, because there's endless possibilities and different answers and experiences. And as you mentioned with the Golden Boy, I grew up Jehovah's Witnesses, and I actually had a call earlier how I, even till this day, like talking to other people, I've noticed that I'm doing things in life, but I see a pattern when someone experienced the ugliest and the, when they call it, not ground zero, when you go to your
rock bottom.
Yeah. And they tend to do so much greatness and serving others. They take serving others as number one, and also Jesus Christ in their lives, and they're doing so many great things. But other people who just have regular life, they just, of course, in a general term, like they just have regular things going on. They're not fighting as much, or they don't know the contracts of what it was like. So it seems like if you came from the dirt, and then you rise up, you never want to go back in the dirt anymore because you know what it was like. So you rise above it, and now you're clean, like the term. As for people who just didn't have events happening in their life, like my life has been uneventful. So I'm just like living a regular life. So I've noticed. And so maybe that's why those people, actually, I never asked them why, but I think I will, moving forward, I will ask that. But it seems like that's why they feel like, okay, their past made them who they are now, because it seems like prior to that, they were just living mundane lives, just like whatever, 9 to 5, and then they got into drugs. Or it seems like a lot of them were having trauma, and that's why they were taking the drugs to numb their pain. But you are just doing it recreationally and not trauma-based, or?
It was recreational until something happened. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And then you took it to mend your pains. Okay.
Yes.
So
that if you want.
Oh yeah, sure. Definitely. You can get into anything you like. Because my podcast is about basically if people tell the raw story, it will inspire others to not feel shame to tell their own. And even if they don't tell it, but not feel shame that, oh, someone else went through that, so it's okay that I went through it too and I'm surviving. So please go ahead. Tell me anything. Yeah.
Yeah, so I went through high school partying, having fun, you know. Drugs were always fun, never had any issues with them, really. Went to college, and on my freshman year of college, one night, September 28th, 2008, I had been out drinking and partying like most nights my freshman year of college. And I woke up at 4:47 a.m. to my phone ringing and vibrating down by my leg. And I swam through the sheets to find the hard phone with the bright screen and read 4:47 a.m. And my best friend Chucker was calling me. And I remember having the conscious choice that I could either answer the phone like I always do with, "Hey, what's up, Chuck?" Or I could answer the way I was feeling with, "Oh, hello." In my still drunken state, I chose the latter, to which a soft voice replied, "Hey, what's up? Why are you calling me this late?" "I was just calling to say hi." "Don't call me this late again." And I hung up on him, and he shot himself. And for nearly a decade, I was unable to tell that story to anyone. I didn't tell anybody about that phone call, as people were consoling me about my best friend killing himself. Nobody knew that in my depths, I believed that it was my fault. And after that, I was no longer using drugs to have fun and party and alcohol to have fun and party. I was masking a hidden identity that I had taken on as someone who killed his best friend. And it wasn't until I actually shared that story with someone. The first time I shared that story was with a random dope dealer on the street. And after I shared the real story, because I lied about it. I lied about that story for that whole time because I was so ashamed of what happened. Mm-hmm. And as soon as I started sharing it, I was able to begin a healing process. I didn't get clean right away, but once I released that and was able to start telling the truth about it, I began being able to start seeking a real solution.
Wow. My condolences about that. Yeah. Wow. I'm sorry. I'm just feeling the whole thing. So how have you came out of that? Are you still feeling the trauma, or how did you come out of it, or can you tell us?
I'm so open about it now that I don't think that I still relive the trauma of it. It took a while to, the trauma was only when I wasn't open about it, because obviously there were things that were happening all the way up to that phone call. Mm-hmm. There was nothing I could have done. I'm well aware of that. You know, mm-hmm. He was waiting for the time. I was young. There was nothing I could do. It wasn't my fault. But believing that it was what the biggest trauma was, mm-hmm. you know? And, now there's, obviously living through, IV drug addiction, there's been a lot of other traumas that have happened since then. And that one was just kind of that was the first real trauma that I had in my life, you know, where I was like, oh my, like where it just like everything inside of me had just been crushed, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So after that, the drugs just cause a lot of trauma.
Mm-hmm.
It causes it.
I bet I did not experience, well, alcohol is drug too, but that's why they say drugs and alcohol. So my experience with drugs, smoking, and alcohol is I knew of them and I've said no to the drugs for a long time. And then as I'm an adult and I was like, you know, when you hear sometimes people say, oh, you can control it. And so I would take a puff and I'm like, no, this is not for me. Or I knew the consequences and I just wanted to experience it one time just to say I did it so I can experience it as a scientist. But I never went deep into the rabbit hole, as they say. But until not last year anymore, 2020, I had a housemate and then he was like really deep into it. And I had a rule in the house where I said, if you use drugs, you should move in prior to that. And if you are doing it and I don't know, just keep it that way, because I'd rather not get into it. But then we got really close and then he would tell me all this stuff and I practiced unconditional acceptance and or love. And so not until later on, because I've noticed one thing too, talking to a lot of people who went through drug abuse, but I didn't know about that when I was it was happening with my housemate, that somehow a lot of people who use drugs, even if they know it's not good for them, and I noticed it. And the way he was living, and when we also talked about it, how somehow they want to, it's kind of like the serpent in the garden. They want to offer you, their misery, whatever. So he kept like offering drinking and smoking and, hey, you don't want to try, are you sure, whatever. And I would say no. And I've noticed one way to get close to these people, you have to join their either misery or their habits. And how he was pulling away from me. And I was like, okay, so I heard that you can control it. And he said you could control it. And I would call it BS. I'm like, yeah, it's BS. You're doing it when you want to. And that's like 5 times out of 7 days. You think it's control, but because he's saying I'm not an addict and all this stuff. And so I was just like, okay, so I tried Coke so I can get close to him. And then I had a bad reaction to it, thankfully, because when I did smoking or weed, just like one time ever, and sipping on alcohol, I never had like great experiences with it. So which helped, because the first time was like the last. And then when that happened with the Coke, that happened physically as well. And also the relationship with him was dwindling anyway, because he's doing drugs. And so there's always like blaming and like creating things out of the blue. I was like, what the hell's happening? And then later on, he would be like, oh, so I was drunk, or sorry, I was doing too much Coke and I was in my head, or it was his demons, whatever. And so I started noticing that pattern after I started talking to people on the podcast who had drug issues. And I was like, oh, wow, this wasn't happening. And I'm glad that I never got into the rabbit hole of that with him. But that was like my experience. It seems like people who was doing these things, they often like to offer, even if it's not doing great for their lives. Right. So it seems like that was happening, like someone offering you that. And so how would someone listening or watching this, what other steps for them to get rid of shame, guilt, or fear that plagues their life? Or how have you done that yourself that you can mentor that to somebody watching?
You have to be open about it and talk about it with someone that you can trust to have the conversation with. You don't want to have it with someone that is going to talk to somebody else about it, because I've made that mistake also, where I had somebody in a fellowship that I shared everything with, and then all of a sudden it's everybody knows about it in the fellowship. So that's another trauma. So you want to, the thing is, you can't hold it in yourself. And I continually have to release control of things that I don't have control of. That's a lot of where fear is based, is trying to hold on to something that you have no control of, and being afraid you're going to lose it if you don't do something about it. When in reality, if you just are the best that you can be in every moment, then, you know, there's nothing to be afraid of. Whatever happens, happens. You know?
Mm-hmm. Right. And we're holding on so much into control. And then we're, at least in my experience, that's when I used to have anxiety of, what's that thing? Panic attacks, because I want to hold on to control so much. And then I lose control in that process, and that became the panic attack. Right. And so when I was like, you know what, just flow with life. And of course I can control what I can control at the moment, but if I lose control, it's okay. And I haven't had panic attacks for over a decade. But I didn't know the process and what I was doing, but I was getting them, I would say like at least 3 times a month out of the blue for nothing. And I was like very confused about that. And, yeah, it's great. And as of last year, I have decided to stop shitting myself or guilting myself and having fear. And especially when I've been this golden child kid all my adult life too. And then when I did the drug and I let someone who was doing these things basically stay in my life. And then I got trauma because of that too, because for 10 months I became depressed afterwards and all this stuff. And so being depressed and guilting myself and shaming myself was like stone on top of stones. Like I was shameful for being shameful and all these things and having guilt. Like I never done this all my life and why now? And all this stuff. And then I woke up one day and I was like, you know what? I'm done with all these things. And that was like around, I would say maybe July or August of 21. That's when I was like, okay, I'm done with any of this stuff. And when I decided to be done, that's when my depression went away, and of course to each their own, but I feel like depression, we have, at least me, I did have power over it, and I could stop it, of course, with working as well and recognizing where I'm at. But it seems like a lot of people, their depression, they feel like that's their identity and they cannot do anything about it. Do you have any thoughts about that?
I mean, I have struggled with depression, you know, and it's crappy, really crappy, because you can go from, you know, completely happy with everything that's going on in life to unable to basically do anything, you know, and I don't accept any negative identity, but sometimes I need a break from everything, you know, and I think it's okay to take a break from everything if you need it for your own mental health. I don't think there's any shame in, I used to think it was a weakness. I used to think that, you know, I was ashamed that I struggle with mental health things still, you know, but it's, you know, it is what it is. I have to deal with this and I have to overcome this. And the only thing that I found that actually helps to overcome this stuff is a deeper connection with God, a deeper faith, a deeper understanding, a deeper belief, a deeper meaning of the word, and these things that are constantly in my head, and I have to continue to put them in my head. And, you know, nothing else has worked for me. I just don't think that there is shame in it, because a lot of people will put shame on it, or like you said, accept it as an identity. Like, I'm just a depressed person. I'm not happy. I like taking this on and saying these I am statements is going to make it last.
Yeah.
And my thing is I try to make the I try not to give the thoughts any more time than I have to, you know, because I have a limited amount of time. I've got 24 hours in a day. I've got 7 days in a week. And, you know, I've got 365 days of those, you know, in a year. And who knows how many years I have? Who knows how many days I have? So wasting it on a misery state is just, it's not worth it, you know? So I have to just, and, you know, I work out and I do those things, and that helps for, you know, getting endorphins going and that kind of stuff. But really it's a relationship with God is the only solution that I found. So.
Yes, certainly. And when I was Jehovah's Witness, I cannot tell how I learned these things, but I would have, we'd call them colleagues. Let's just say brothers and sisters in the church, where people would have mental troubles. But when I was a kid, I didn't know either. Even when I was a teenager, I feel like I was still a kid. But then they're like, how are you not going through that? Or how do you have this different mindset? And I'm like, well, if you have a relationship with God, none of these earthly things matter. They're not part of your life. And so I was very, I guess I'm still am confused, but I was very confused how if you do have a relationship with a higher being, and you know that higher being can get rid of anything in your life that's like, not get rid, but like will help you overcome these things. And then knowing that that thing has the power to, then these little things of life has basically just like whatever. It will be like fire in the wind that can be squashed, or water over fire. So it's like, it's great that you mentioned that, because I've noticed it when I was even younger. It's true. And how can someone, let's say they're religious or they say they have relationship with Christ and they still have life turmoils, what do you think is a disconnect there? Oh, that was there for you, or you think the disconnect is there? I guess everyone's different, but
there is no disconnect, because it talks about it in the Bible. It doesn't say that you're going to be happy, joyous, free, and, you know, connected all the time, you know, like what would be the point of life if it was always one way? There would be no point, you know? And in those hard times, when we seek that, that's just a deeper connection with him. You know, it's one more thing that we overcome with him, you know? And even if you're not religious, there is nothing wrong with reading the Bible. I promise you, like, if you read the Bible with an open heart, instead of a closed mind looking for why it's BS the whole time,
right?
You have an opportunity to learn a lot about yourself. And find things in there that, I mean, I look at it as a I look at it as a love note from my creator. Mm. And it's telling me throughout it how much he loves me personally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the history in it and the things that people say about it, like, it's a lot of it's historical. Like, there's nothing we can do about, you know, about humankind. You know, there's evil afoot always, you know, it just is, we're humans. But it's a love note about my identity and what I'm able to do. And I believe where I'm going, which is my ultimate hope is, and this is like, I don't struggle with this at all. Like, I don't question where I'm going when I die. I don't worry about it. None of that, you know? And now there's that belief, but then there's that's just a sealed promise. It's very, very clear about that in the Bible, what Jesus came to do, like, and how simple it really is. And then it says to bring the kingdom to earth. So then it teaches us what our identity is while we're here and what we're actually able to do with this relationship with Christ. So if you're not in it, just check it out for yourself. Because a lot of times, a lot of people that have this preconceived notion about the Bible and say it's this and this and that, haven't read it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right? Yeah. Yeah.
And when you read it, you listen to this and you haven't read it, don't start at Genesis and read through. You will fall out at Leviticus if you even make it that far. You know, or Numbers. Oh my gosh. If you don't know what's going on.
Yeah, when they're talking about he begets, that part was really like, and it comes to pass and these things. Yeah, but I went through it. Yeah. Growing up, we had to read the Bible twice a year. So basically from the age, I would say for at least, because I was Eurozone for like at least 20 years. So for the first 10 years when I was able to read, I read it twice a year for 10 years. But then Kind of like recently, as in 2018, I wanted to read it again because I'm a religious scholar, but not by degree, but it's just because I love learning different things. And so I tried different religions even. The last one I tried was Mormon. I stopped going around November, like before Christmas, actually. Yeah. But I like to experience things. And so, but as you mentioned, definitely, even if you're not religious, it's great that you're saying it's a letter from your creator. I saw it, yeah, definitely as a letter. Also, I saw it as a guidebook because you don't even need to have a relationship with God or Jesus, let's say to the word. Like if you read the Bible, there's so many things that could totally work for you because I was speaking to a gentleman earlier and I was asking about which does he follow, like the Old Testament or the New Testament and all this stuff. And we were talking about it and I came to the conclusion, I was just like, I don't eat pork and I don't eat shellfish and all this stuff. And it's not because exactly the Bible said it, although some people would argue like that Old Testament, we don't need to do all this stuff anymore. But I saw it as a practical part. Now we understand why shellfish and pork is an issue because scientifically it has a lot of parasites, especially shellfish. People will just eat it raw and then they'll get a parasite. Same with pork belly. And a lot of people don't know about that, but it was in the Bible like thousands or whatever, a million, I don't know the numbers, of years ago, but without a science, we don't need to know the science. It's like, let's say if you were doubting and questioning it, and then you eat pork belly and you have parasites that plagues your health. But now we know the reason, but it was practical prior. So there's like so many different things. Same with wearing different cloth. Like I do my best to wear cotton because I know wearing different cloth, let's say polyester or something that's not breathable, have given me rash and jock itch, especially underwear, is because it's not the greatest fabric. It's not cotton. It's not natural. Right. So little things like that is practical, or even taking a Sabbath or was that other thing when you're not eating, fasting is healthy for your body and also healthy for your mind, because I met a coach and he says, anyone who work 7 days a week, they have a problem with their schedule. And I was thinking about it. I was like, oh my God, this is so true. And this is why even in the Bible, it has a resting day, because it's not healthy to keep going 365 days. It's like, even God rested. Come on, people. So it's very practical. Even if you have Jesus on your side or you're religious, definitely agree with you 100%.
And people listening that haven't read the Bible yet, start with the Gospels, which are Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Just read those and check them out. See what Jesus did and see what's in there. You'll learn a lot from there. It actually says, Jesus literally says that the Sabbath was not created for God. The Sabbath was created for man, because y'all need some rest.
especially mentally, our ass will break down. I went through some breakdown and I've decided, and 2020 helped, I've decided to stop selling my soul for an employer. Of course, I'm going to do my best to, when I do a job, I'm there for what I'm paid for, and I have respect, and also as a business owner, entrepreneur, I know what it's like. But at the same time, I don't know if you remember, but prior to 2020, you go to work like a sick dog, and they'll be like, oh, you have to work and your health is on the line. But now they're like, oh yeah, please stay home. And I'm like, that's what I wanted to do prior to 2020. So I'm going to continue doing that because my health is important. Yeah. So when did you start to have a relationship with Christ? Like, when did that breakthrough happen for you? Because you were in that
circle. When I was 10.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. That's kind of what I was saying. And even earlier than that, because I've always heard the voice of God. I've always just like had this sense, this knowing, this sensitivity to spirit, this real sensitivity to spirit. And at 10 years old, I had my best friend at the time, a sleepover. We were in my basement and I was asking him about God, because I knew that he, you know, went to church and things like that. And he was like, well, all I know is you just have to accept him into your heart. And I said, well, how do I do that? He was like, well, we got to get on our knees. And we got on our knees and we're like the 10-year-olds in the basement of my mom's house, you know, facing each other. And he was like, do you accept Jesus into your heart? And I said, yes. And right when I said that, and I'm getting them right now, I had these chills come over my body. And like, it was my first like real like Holy Spirit experience. And even though, you know, I went down a path, and that's the thing, like just because you're saved doesn't mean you're perfect. Just because you're saved doesn't mean you're not going to go through trials. Just because you're saved doesn't mean that you're no longer going to have temptations or sin or whatever it is. So I was saved since 10. Signed, sealed, delivered, eternity stamped. But then I just had some stuff I had to go through.
You're right. Yeah. Yes, most certainly. And as I mentioned before, I feel like because I haven't gone through so many things, because I'm keeping myself from trouble, I only this year I've been searching to make friends. And because I don't know exactly why, but subliminally, I feel like I wasn't even making friends because I was keeping myself safe. I go to work, go to school, then go home and stay away from people and situations. And so not many eventful things happening, but at the same time, I've grown personally through like other things in life, but talking to a lot of people through a podcast, I was like, wow, they have grown like exponentially. And me, I'm just like dancing through life. And so I had to, not really a comparison, because I don't feel like low, but I was like, interesting how it seems like somehow when your life is shaking up, you grow so much on a louder level or bigger, like miles away. But if your life is just like you dancing through it, it's